I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania.
So welcome to Barnstorming PA. It's a
I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, we're really pleased to be joined by Representative Malcolm Kenyatta today, representative in the Pennsylvania State House and also a candidate for U.S. Senate in 2022. Welcome. We're so thankful to have you here.
Well, first of all, I'm grateful that you've created this platform and just looking forward to the conversation. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, absolutely. And for first-time listeners here, like I said, my name is Taylor Lightman. I used to be involved in politics professionally, and now I'm mostly involved as a volunteer as I've gone off and started working in neighborhood revitalization. In the wake of Donald Trump's election in 2017, my co-host and I, Jordy Comas, basically started this platform as a way to get out the word about all the kinds of activism and things that were happening in Central PA that we didn't feel like were being covered in, the mainstream media. It's been a really great platform to get the word out about politics, progressive politics in Central and Northeastern Pennsylvania. That's where the majority of our listenership is. And so you can always come on Barnstorming to get more informed, hear from local politicians, from statewide politicians, and get a little sense of what's going on the ground. So without further ado, we'll proceed here with our interview with Representative Kenyatta here. And really quickly, anybody listening can support our work with a one-time donation on PayPal or a recurring donation on Patreon. And you can go to barnstormingpa.org to learn more about the podcast and figure out ways to support. Also, we have a product line coming out shortly. For those that have been in Pennsylvania, in Central Pennsylvania specifically, know the hex sign. And we have a hex sign coming out here that says elect Democrats. And very good to support the party. So be on the lookout for that. So Representative Kenyatta, like many of the races happening in Pennsylvania, you're in a crowded field. I'm curious there's many choices for voters, which is always good, but what differentiates you in that crowded field?
Well, I would say this for me, our campaign has been about answering this simple fundamental question of who we think government should work for. And for me, that answer is unequivocally that it should work for working people. I think that there's this basic bargain that, you know what, you can have one good job, that job can be backed up by a union. And if you want to start a small business because you have a great idea, that there's an environment for you to do so. If you choose to have kids, that those kids be able to go to a good school. And if either of you get sick, you, your partner, your kids, that you're able to go to the doctor, and then you know what, actually fill the prescription when you leave, because it's affordable. And then I think in the golden years of your life, you should actually be able to retire with a level of dignity in that home that you raised your kids, in a neighborhood that's safe, that has clean air and clean water. And so what I've often said is that we need senators who understand in their bones what's broken. I think we need more policymakers who understand that bargain has been out of reach. And it certainly was out of reach for my family and for so many Pennsylvanians. And what I found everywhere I go, barnstorming the state, I know it's trademarked, but I just want to throw that in there. But everywhere I go.
Well, that's okay. We won't sue.
But genuinely, everywhere I go, I hear people talk about how that basic bargain has been out of reach for their family. But that's not often the experience of policymakers. In this instance, we have an opportunity to elect a U.S. senator for whom that is my experience. I understand in my bones what's broken because I've lived it. And I know we'll talk about that more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great way to start off the show. I mean, and you and I have talked before, and what immediately came to the forefront of the conversation is your background. And your background is sort of unique at this level of politics. So how does your background inform your politics, And then how do you, this is sort of a two-parter, how do you then connect with people that don't share that background to create unbreakable solidarity?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for using the language of unbreakable solidarity. We often talk about building a big and bold coalition that's exactly the same, because the reality is, what I have found is that most Pennsylvanians share my experience, right? There are different twists and turns, but all of them understand how different parts of that basic bargain have been out of reach for their family. The reality for so many people who are working class people, and we've all felt this, is that we're so often treated with this lack of agency that I find deeply troubling. We're good enough to be votes, but for so many folks who are a part of the elite as it's constituted, don't see us as having anything to offer on the issues that actually impact our lives, which I've always found to be pretty absurd, that we wouldn't want to have the folks who are most impacted be most central to where we're going to be solving the problems. And so, you know, it took me some time. I didn't want to run for office. I remember the first time I thought about running for office and being with my partner, Dr. Matt, when he was still living in California, finishing his PhD, and people were saying, "Hey, Malcolm, you should run for state rep." And I remember saying, like, I could never do it. And going down a list of all the reasons that I thought I was disqualified from running because I didn't look like the candidates. I don't mean that necessarily from a racial perspective. I mean, from the whole sort of body of experiences, I wasn't the traditional candidate. And I know for people who go and find out more about me after listening to this, you ain't never heard nobody talking about they running for the U.S. Senate like me. But what I've come to find is that everything I thought disqualified me actually qualified me. We have to have people who are able to speak with a level of authenticity and urgency about the problems we faced. And I've been welcomed with open arms from Reidsville to Oiltown, to Oil City rather, to Erie, to Wilkes-Barre, and everywhere else. That is because the challenges we're facing are universal. And I remember I was up at the Wilkes-Barre NAACP speaking about the work that we had yet to do. And I looked out in that room, and what you saw was the type of big and bold coalition that I believe, frankly, we just have to be a little bit more confident in. There's always this push to have Democrats run from something. Dems in disarray, Republicans on the rebound, all the time. But the reality is, our coalition, as big and diverse as it is, that's the strength of it. That's the strength of it. And the ideas that we're talking about and running on, affordable housing, safe communities, good schools, clean air and clean water, dignified retirement, turns out, Taylor, these are popular ideas. And so my approach has been to go talk to people about what I know, and in doing so, understand that what I know is what most people know. It's just not what most senators know.
Yeah, that's really fair. And I think you're absolutely right. And I used to work for SEIU, or organizing nurses, and it was just amazing to me, regardless of what political background people thought they had, we were able to generate 80, 90, 95, sometimes even 100% support for basic things that everybody agreed on no matter what. And it was just, oftentimes in electoral politics, we get stuck in this groove that says that I just got to get 51%. But I think a lot of the things that you talked about, when we talked previously, you talked about healthcare. Healthcare is an extremely important issue. And I think one that is able to deliver that unbreakable solidarity, because who doesn't want good, affordable healthcare?
Yeah. And also everybody deserves it. And so thank you for your work, organizing, our frontline workers. And I've been, so grateful to have the support, of SEIU in this race. And I know that, they very rarely endorse in these big statewide races. But we're lucky that in this instance, they felt unanimously, all the locals, that we represented the most authentic and urgent voice for restoring that basic bargain to all of our working families.
Yeah, that is a as our president, I might say a BFD. So you kind of have a very interesting perspective in that you're talking with more people than probably anybody else in the state right now, going across the state, hearing from a lot of different people. And we too often let large corporations and sort of the general sense define what an electorate is and how voters are feeling. But I'm sure that what you're seeing on the ground is very different. What will be unique about the 2022 electorate from your perspective?
I think, frankly, I hope that it is a robust and reflective, you know, electorate. One of the numbers that's already keeping me up at night, and we have to do incredibly hard work to shift, is there was a poll out from NBC News that showed, I believe, 61% of Republicans are excited, ready to vote in this next election. And that number is only 47% for Democrats right now. That number is a blaring warning sign that I think we have to get back to talking about the basic bargain and how we make it accessible to everybody, because everywhere I go, that is what people are talking about. And certainly all of our communities have differences. Don't get me wrong. But I was in Altoona and back in my home in my district in North Philly. And you know what? I had two groups of people who wanted to talk to me about childcare, who wanted to talk to me about the fact that it's been difficult for them to get back to work because they don't have affordable childcare. Two completely different communities. But the top of mind concern in both from those parents was, what can I do to make sure my kid can be in a safe environment where they are learning and getting everything that they need to be put on a pathway of success? And how can I get back out there in the workforce, because you know my expenses have risen, but you know what, the pay that I have coming in has not risen at the same rate, and so I have to get back out there. But childcare is a barrier, and we ended up talking to Altoona about that. I went for an event, and we ended up talking with a group after that, you know, maybe for 30-45 minutes about this issue. That's the same concern here. And I think that that's one of the best things that I can offer in this race, is my ability to help people speak across difference and to pull people together who, you know, just look phenotypically and say, oh, we have nothing in common. And then recognize that, oh, actually, we've been talking about the same things the whole time, the whole time. But because of the regionalized nature of Pennsylvania, I think that it has been a playbook from politicians and from, you know, huge corporations who've been able to spend, as of wrongly decided cases like Citizens United, spend limitless amounts of money, that they've worked really hard to try to divide us up by region and to do what I think is something that Republicans are really, really consistent at trying to do. Trying to get us to not talk and trust each other. I think that that has been one of the most dangerous, but one of the most effective things that Republicans have been able to do, is to get us to not talk to each other. Because every time I've talked to folks who are Democrats, independents, Republicans, maybe not registered and not interested at this point, you hear a similar story every time. And we get sidetracked. We get sidetracked by people who want to hold on to power and want to try to use these distinctions as ways to hold on to power. But Nancy Pelosi says something to the House caucus all the time that I love, and she said it perfectly, so I'll just repeat it. Our diversity is our strength, and our unity is our power. And I see that for Pennsylvania as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's brilliant. And it is so simple, but it's so challenging. Like, yeah. I feel deeply, you know, in my bones that this is, you know, probably the most important election of my lifetime, you know, right now. Although 2016 was pretty important too. we didn't handle that very well. But I just don't understand how to help people see the, that the fierce urgency of now, to borrow a phrase. Do you have any, how do you do it?
So I think, you know, for me, it's always a two-step process, because I think we're trying to get that feeling of urgency from people who have tapped out of the political system in one way or another. I think that first, you know, like to be just honest and acknowledging the fact that the basic bargain has been out of reach, that there are so many families. I was talking to somebody yesterday who is a county chair who was saying that they're working two jobs right now.
Because, I mean, a lot of people do.
That's right.
Three, and, four, and, even.
That's right. And a part of what they were so infuriated about is they said the company they work for, you know, nationally, you know, pushes out statements saying, oh, we need to have people paid well, $15, like this is what we need to do. And yet at the location where this individual is employed, they're the highest paid person and they only make $8.25.
Yeah.
That's the gulf that so often exists. And I think to get people engaged, we can't try to act like that. It's not real. That is real. That is real. People should be frustrated. But the question is, what do we do with that frustration? Because the worst thing you can do if you're frustrated at what's happening in the body politic is decide you're going to leave the conversation. That actually can help to cement the very concerns that you're frustrated about and ensure that we don't make needed progress. I often, you know, explain it as karaoke. Go with me here for a second.
Yeah.
But I feel like people who can really, really sing are often, like, I see them like not want to do karaoke. They're like, you know, I haven't rested my voice. My band isn't here. I can't do it right now. But people who should not be fucking singing, those folks are like, please sign me up. Like, yeah. I'm ready to sing. And I find that often in politics, the people who have the most to offer, who have perspectives that are badly needed, so often buy into this idea that their perspective isn't as valuable as it actually is. And then the people who are full of shit, they run every single time and have no interest, frankly, in really solving any of these problems, because there aren't their problems. Those problems, and to the extent that they talk about them or address them, is a means to them to hold on to power.
Totally. And I mean, I think one of the most challenging things that Democrats have to do, and, you know, those on the left and those Republicans that have some courage, is to both articulate a message and a vision for society that acknowledges some of these really fundamentally messed up aspects of our economy, while addressing this gnawing pervasive message on the Republican Party that the system, we should place no trust in our government, we should place no trust in the system, and that everything is fundamentally broken, so you might as well just say no and not get involved. And it's a very challenging rope to walk. So I don't know. I don't have any answer for that, but I think you're doing a very good job of it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. For me, it's just about telling the truth. People know their life. And so just need to be honest with people about what's going on. And then also lay out a vision of how we get from here to there. Politics is at its core a math problem. It's a math problem. Do we have enough votes in a particular chamber where we're trying to pass a certain piece of legislation to get it done? It's the reality. Do we have enough votes? Your participation is part and parcel of whether or not we're able to answer that math problem in a way that answers the first question that I started this entire interview with. Answer that fundamental, that core question of who should government work for? And to answer that question, we have to have the right math.
Yeah. And it's funny that you bring that up, because that really, I imagine this is going to tie into to your next answer. But I, you know, in reading a little bit about you, I saw that you were involved in a lot of the student protests that happened when the Corbett administration was making huge and drastic and life-changing cuts to the way that we fund our education system. That's actually globally, student protests about education funding is how a lot of people, you know, the road into politics for a lot of people, but is relatively rare here in America, I think. How does that, I don't know if that was your first politicizing moment, which you can maybe tell us about if that's not it, but how does that inform the way that you do politics?
You know, what's never lost on me, and when I walk into the chamber in Harrisburg and recognize that, you know, the first time I was there was for a protest. And now I get to be there trying to make movement on all of those things, including getting rid of the weight that is crushing student loan debt. And also, I think back to that moment, my hair was shorter, my waist was slimmer. Good times, good times.
Yeah.
Don't grow up, kids. but more genuinely, for me, and I've told this story often and excited to share with your listeners, for me, politics started much, much younger, at least civic engagement. It started with the story of my mom. My parents separated, I guess it was about 8 or 9, somewhere in there. And, you know, what that meant is I moved a bunch of times by the time I graduated high school. But we're now living at the second place since my parents have separated. And I'm on this block, which is in my now State House district, by the way. And I just remember coming home one day and complaining to my mom about everything on the block. I was like, the block is, you know, it's too much trash on it and blight, and I hate it here and blah, 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 and just whatever the, you know, heck I was saying. But I remember her saying to me, you know what? If you care so much, why don't you go do something about it? Why don't you go do something about it? And I was like, oh, like, okay, I thought you were going to give me a hug, but that works too, I guess. And I, you know, tough love. And I ran for junior block captain. That was the first thing I ever did civically. And it started this long trajectory of me being engaged.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I'm just curious, did you win?
Junior block captain? Oh, I did win.
Okay. And what did you do? Trash pickups or?
That's right. We did, you know, block cleanups, and there was an annual block party that we helped to organize. And, you know, it's those small little things just on one block that make two things, well, have made two things abundantly clear for me forever, is that A, the incredible power of organizing, you know, there's a saying in church often that don't wait on your neighbor because your neighbor might be waiting on you. And I find that to be fundamentally true, that when you step up and step out and speak on something, whatever that issue is, it's heartening that you often find so many people who felt the exact same way who hadn't said anything yet.
I think that's a really powerful perspective and something that we all should take to heart. I'm going to start, you know, we have a couple of ending questions here that I just want to ask you. And they're more not necessarily personal, but I think we'll give folks, if they haven't already, an insight into your character. Who's somebody that has been a mentor to you, and what does that say about you?
Mm-hmm. I would have to say Dr. Kamika Williams-Witherspoon, who's a professor at Temple, I went to college. I was very much involved in poetry in college, and I founded a performance poetry group called Babble over a decade ago. And it's still going strong. They've won national poetry slam competitions. But Kamika was my advisor for that. She taught a poetry class at Temple that I loved. I ended up being her TA, and she was an advisor to Babble. And she taught me a number of things, but more than anything else, she taught me about this Swahili word, nomo, which means that words have power. That is something that I've thought about my entire life. Words do fundamentally have power. And what we say about ourselves, what we say to each other, matters. And how we treat each other matters. But more importantly, how we treat ourselves matters. And so her first TA, Dr. Williams Witherspoon, was a woman named Ariana, who has become a really good friend of mine. And we've been friends for years and years. She would say something at the end of that class, when I first met the two of them, when we would leave, she'd say, be good to yourself, just as a goodbye thing. And now it's something people often hear me say, be good to yourself, because it's a reminder that you can only be as good to other people as you first give to yourself. And so the grace that we extend internally is going to be reflective of the grace we extend externally. And so, yeah, so Ariana and Kamika are two people I think about often.
And is there a book or maybe a poem that you read that has made a huge impact on you?
Anything James Baldwin, anything and everything James Baldwin. I think he's probably one of the most prolific writers. Not even probably, I was going to say the most, but let's just say one of the most prolific writers of the last two centuries. He is somebody with so much of his writings has been a critical voice for me, in part because he very much, embraced the dual distinctions that he held as a Black and gay man in this country. And that's something that is needed. Our distinctions are beautiful. I've heard people, our differences don't matter, as if the way we build solidarity is to act like we're all the same. When in fact, the way we build solidarity is to recognize the strength of our distinctions. I believe that all of us, that we need windows and mirrors. Right? We need to be able to see ourselves and our own experience reflected in all the different ways that we see experiences reflected on TV in our local community. But we also need windows into other people's experience that helps to make our own more full. And James always did that for me.
Mm, that's beautiful. What is a defeat that you faced and how did that impact you in how has that changed you? How did you grow from that experience?
So that's a really good question. For me, it was probably losing student body president at Temple, actually. I was deeply, deeply involved at school, and I knew everybody. I had high name ID, right? And I ran, and twice I lost. Mm. And those campaigns were really telling in the sense that in both instances, I didn't run through the tape. I, ran really hard and then assumed I was gonna win. And so when you assume you're gonna win, you stop running as hard as you can. You don't run fully through the tape. Those experiences have taught me to run through, run hard, take nothing and no one for granted, go everywhere and ask everybody for their vote. And I mean this genuinely. I'm like, not just saying this for your podcast. I asked Dr. Matt, my partner, for his vote. I don't know. Assume anything.
Yeah.
I asked everybody, for their support. And since then, I've, you know, run for delegate twice. I've run for state rep. And so far, I've won every race since then. So here's hoping.
Yeah, here's hoping. I have two more questions here. And one is that, you know, folks might not know this about you, but you early on in the 2020 presidential race, you endorsed Joe Biden. Made what I mean I think was maybe a really good political decision. And you perhaps understand something about the American electorate that a lot of people didn't understand in the Democratic establishment. I'm just going to ask, you know, why did you make that call, and what do you think that says about your understanding of the electorate?
Well, it really was thinking about our party. Let me say something. Everybody said, I don't think. Joe Biden was necessarily the only candidate who cared about the issues of working people. Certainly not. I don't think he was the only candidate who had good ideas and ideas that maybe, you know, I don't agree with. But what I did feel like he had uniquely was the ability to bring the field together when it was over.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I thought about from the very beginning. I mean, we have a big field in the Senate race. But there was an even bigger field, if folks remember, in the presidential race.
For sure.
It was 27 people.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah.
who announced that they were running. And I thought about 27 people running, all different skill sets, all different relationships, who was going to be able to bring people together? And there's an article that folks can go look up where somebody did a dive into like why Bernie endorsed Biden so much quicker than he endorsed Hillary. And there's a line in it that I'll never forget that made me feel like, oh, damn, I really made the good call. They said for Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden fell into a small group of people, of folks who were kind to him before he was a national figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you heard that from every single candidate, from Elizabeth Warren, from Bernie, who often talks about the deep friendship that he and Joe Biden have. And certainly you heard it from the other candidates in the field who are maybe more moderate, that all of them had a level of trust in him, that he would listen genuinely and not just listen to check it off the box, but listen genuinely. And when you look at the appointments, When you look at the appointments that he's made, including a number of like Elizabeth Warren staffers who are now at the DNC and other things, when you look at the Build Back Better agenda that he's proposed, which, you know, has universal support from the party with the exception of two knuckleheads right now. What I saw,
I would have said worse.
That's, you know, this is because it's early. I'm trying to be nicer.
For sure.
New Year's resolution thing.
yes.
But I did feel like that ability to build a coalition in a party that is diverse, the Democratic Party, again, what Nancy Pelosi said, I won't repeat the comment, but you all know what she said. I fundamentally believe in that. When I look at the endorsements that we've picked up too, what you see are so many people who you would never imagine supporting the same candidate, all supporting me. You know, every single progressive organization that has endorsed me without exception. And then you have a number of folks who, again, I don't agree with on every issue, but we both agree on this idea of restoring the basic bargain, and maybe we debate how to get there. But they trust me in this role because they know that I believe the best mark of a leader is somebody who listens as well as leads, who listens as well as leads. And I felt like that was something Joe Biden does. And that was really why I did that.
Yeah, I think that's it was obviously a really good decision. And there is, you know, the field was very flashy. There were a lot of things promised, but it's cool that the fundamental decency of Joe Biden won the day.
Especially in contrast to the fundamental indecency of the other guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I lied. I have two more questions. One, everybody has a junk drawer in their kitchen. what's something in your junk drawer that you think everybody should have? And what's something in your junk drawer that you think, you know, you should get rid of?
So batteries and like all of my junk drawer have all these random batteries everywhere. So guys, have batteries, okay? You need them for that remote, for that
all kinds
smoke detector, like for that flashlight, whatever it is. And so like super randomly, because you know, you go to like Costco or whatever and you get a huge pack of them that you have forever and they end up in all different drawers. So that is something that's very pronounced that comes to mind. The other thing that I would get rid of is, you know, I'm somebody who keeps usually like a lot of little things on my keys. Like I have like little different things on my keychain.
Yeah.
And even when they fall off, I will like hang on to them. And some of them like no longer have sentimental value that I can actually get rid of like, you know,
are you just talking about like
I went to.
Oh, okay. All right. Are you talking about like mementos that you pick up at a roadside stand?
Yeah, like you go to a random conference and they'll give you a bag and maybe for the conference there's a keychain in it. And I'm like, yeah, one day this keychain will be really useful for, I don't know, I need to throw them out. Thanks for reminding me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And last question. How can folks follow your campaign? How can they hear more?
So the good news for everybody is that if you go and that there's, I don't know of another Malcolm Kenyatta. And so if you go Malcolm Kenyatta, you'll find all the things. Anything written that's good is true. Anything bad is a lie. No, but I don't. But genuinely, you know, it's just at Malcolm Kenyatta on everything, on all the different socials. Our website is malcolmkenyatta.com. And, you know, really, we love to hear from people and keep this dialogue going, because I will tell you this, and it's something either my mom or one of my aunts said to me, but nevertheless, I remember it was a wise woman. Okay, I can tell you that for sure. That once you think that anything you've accomplished, that you accomplished it because you were so beautiful or you're so smart or you're so brave, you've already failed. Anything of substance that you've accomplished it because there were so many people who've helped you. Because of so many people who've helped you. That is certainly my perspective in this campaign. And when the campaign is over, because we all want to win this race. I certainly want to win this race, and we're going to win this race, because the idea of restoring the basic bargain is they're popular ideas with the American people. But I'm also running for the day the election is over. And when you desperately need somebody to fight for you and your family, that's what I'm running for. And I don't do that by myself. I don't do it by myself. Not only can I not do it by myself, I don't want to do it by myself. And so I ask folks, please join this coalition. Follow us on social media, go to the website, figure out how to volunteer. We'd love to have you as a part of our coalition now and when we win. And now it's time, then it'll be time to actually deliver on all the things we talked about.
Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Bellevue, Rock View, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Root, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Illiesburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, Amadanny. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel ever had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Bellefonte, Southmont, West.
Westmont, Wilmsdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Hummelsdorf, Cedar Springs, Bowling Springs, Chess Springs, Center Bridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport, Brackenridge, Lumber City, Central City, Lake City, Clearfield, Westfield, Wentfield, Richfield, big deal. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the Allen's Fair, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel like I have my share, man. I've been everywhere. Glen, Wilpen, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Maxtoney, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punxsutawney, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Telenor, Lovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel like I had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Stump Creek, Pence Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakeslee, Falls Creek, Shippensburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Row, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.